Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Incidentally, one of our guys said he was a Bartolator, and that is a word I have never seen. Pete, what is a Bartolator?
And today's topic is a literary term, Bartolatry. According to Wikipedia, Bartolatry is excessive admiration of William Shakespeare. As we know that Shakespeare is known as Bard of Avon, and in 18th century, Shakespeare's works were viewed as precursor of Romanticism. So there is a great admiration of Shakespeare in 18th century.
Okay. Got a new guy helping us out now. I believe he might be from India, the Bard of Avon, as he likes to call him. So that's somebody that's really into Shakespeare. I'll bet Dr. Copen knew all about that. He's so smart. Hi, Dr. Copen. How are you?
John, I'm terrific. And I learned a new word, I have to tell you. I didn't know that one.
Bartolator. Our conversation with Dr. Jeffrey Copen from Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital is sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. When you were going to med school, and it wasn't just yesterday, but I wonder if you had any time to read Shakespeare or play video games or do things, or was that just the just long haul through endless hours of classes and hospital rounds?
Yeah, medical school was a lot of work, John. I mean, it still is today. Nothing's changed there. I though, had a steady diet of things I'd like to read outside of medicine. I found that kept me sane, and I think it made me a better doctor that I did that. You know, and actually, now that you've asked me the question, my final semester in medical school, I was able to take any course I wanted to at Northwestern, literally anything, without additional tuition. So I took a graduate-level seminar in modern fiction. So it was me, the almost doctor, I hadn't had gotten my MD degree yet, with a bunch of graduate students in various humanity disciplines. And that was a whole different experience for me after 4 years of medical school.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. That was really interesting. We read a novel a week, and then we had a 3-hour seminar on Tuesday evenings with a professor and discussed the novel. That was great. And I really recommend doing stuff like that for my medical students
right
to this day.
Well, you can not only learn a lot from fiction, of course you can. Good fiction tells you about people, but also it makes you a more interesting person. The better rounded the individual, I'm sure, the better the doctor.
Totally. You know, I think that to be a good doctor, you just have to know a lot of stuff, you know, because you're dealing with people. You know, like, now I know what a Bartolator is. So it's going to make me even a better physician.
My dermatologist at Northwestern is a brilliant, I think. I mean, I see her for short periods of time every few months, but I think she's very smart and really attentive. She remembers things about me that I can't believe. And then she goes, John, I'm your doctor. And some of it's on your chart. And I said, I'm glad you looked at the chart and you even remember that. But I always bring a book when I go to the doctor's office because sometimes I think, I might be here for a while, I'm going to read. So I always carry a hardback book over there, and she and I talk about books. She said to me a visit or two ago, well, I read as well. She says, at night, I'll just sit there and read the New England Journal of Medicine. I said, not what I'm talking about, Doc. Not what I'm talking about. But I'm lucky to have her care nearby. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. There's a couple of topics we talked about before, but I just want to make sure we're completely caught up. Here's another story from WGN-TV. It says Ozempic and similar weight loss drugs may lower the risk of 42 health conditions. There are also some risks. Just ballpark me, doctor. What would you like us to know about the weight loss drugs these days? Because, wow, are they everywhere.
Yeah, they're everywhere, and I think this year, with the change in the government in Washington, we'll probably talk later about what's going on in Health and Human Services, Medicare program, we're going to see all kinds of changes in coverage and benefits with these medicines, so we're going to have a lot to talk about. But, Jim, what we're doing right now, we're living through, medical research and medical outcomes in real time.
Yeah.
That's what's going on here. So still a relatively new class of medications, right? These drugs like Ozempic, and they're not all exactly the same, but they're all at least first cousins. And as we get more and more experience with them, it turns out that they have the potential to be very effective in things beyond diabetes, which was one of the original, actually that was the original reason for the drug to be developed.
Right.
And then it went on to heart failure. And then it turned out that the people on this were losing weight. And that's where the manufacturers got really excited, because that's obviously a great big market. And then there's kidney things that it could help with, liver things it could help with. I mean, on and on. That list of 42 different potential benefits is pretty extraordinary. My guess is over time, it will turn out not everything on that 42-item list turns out to be true. It's going to take more time to know that. But there is no question that there is a huge amount of benefit that will continue to come out of these medicines, and we're going to learn how to use them more effectively.
Well,
with time.
Let me just bounce a number off you, Doc. Again, this is from a WGN Radio and TV's website. Today, 1 in 8 American adults say they have used a GLP-1 drug, and the forecasts say that by 2030, 1 in 10 will likely be using these medications, I guess, concurrently. In the next 5 years, 1 in 10 of us will be giving ourselves that shot in the thigh, or however it'll be administered.
Yeah, I saw the report where that actually came from. We'll see. It might be a bit too enthusiastic. If you think about the number of people that live in this country, I mean, would that be over 30 million individuals using this medication regularly? That might indeed happen. We'll see. But I think the interest that people have in this class of medications and the ever-enlarging use of these medications, potential reasons to use this medication, is going to keep our discussion about these meds really on our front page, John. This isn't going to go away.
Yeah.
And it's really important. And I also think that we're going to have to deal as a society with the cost of these medications.
Well, won't they come down, though? I mean, if 30 million people are using something, tell China about this. They'll make it cheaper in 20 minutes. I mean, there ought to be a way to bring the cost down of this medicine, right?
Yeah, you know, it has to happen. It will happen. Right now, though, all these medications are in patent, and we've spoken about the whole patent process before. And the companies have been able to keep the prices as high as they are because they're still on patent. There are no generic competitors yet. But at the same time, as the manufacturers have had a hard time keeping up with the demand. This is not an easy medication to make. So as they're gearing up their production capabilities, demand is far outstripping the supply. So now we just get into basic economics.
Yeah.
What I think we're going to see this year, though, is the manufacturer is going to catch up to the demand, and that by itself should cause the price to go down.
Dr. Jeffrey Copen from Northwestern joins us now. If the administration says that they're going to freeze Medicaid care, those dollars aren't going to go out to states. Illinois has already evidently seen a freeze on that. If not, it's going to happen in 2 hours here. I wonder exactly what that means. The White House spokesperson said it's not going to affect individual payments. I'm not exactly sure how those two things are possible. Federal programs eventually go to individuals. But what are your thoughts about that, and how will that impact people, if you have an informed opinion about that, Doc?
Yeah, so, Jen, what happened over the last 4 years with COVID, the number of people who went on the Medicaid rolls and then stayed on the Medicaid rolls went up very high. So there's a lot more folks who have Medicaid coverage today than 4 years ago. And what I understand the new administration is trying to do is get their hands around this, what this means, who are these people? Are there other ways for these folks to get the health coverage that they need without them being on the Medicaid program? So that's what's going on. This is very, very complicated. It's obviously politically fraught, but from my standpoint, it's critically important that, you know, individuals have access to health care that's paid for in some way.
Right.
So that's what's going on right now. You know, Dr. Oz, I saw Dr. Phil on the front page of the Tribune today, and now I'm talking about Dr. Oz, John. Crazy. Dr. Oz is going to be taking over responsibility for the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. So they're going to have to figure out who these beneficiaries are, and is there a better way perhaps to do this that doesn't cost as much money?
Well, and who would, even if you think those are dubious appointments, if that's the mission, that sounds like a good mission, right?
Yeah, and I'm not saying that I believe that Dr. Oz is a bad choice for CMS. He apparently has quite a bit of knowledge about it. It's just going from being Dr. Oz to being the head of the Center for Medicare, Medicaid Services is not something I would have thought of a year ago.
Are you thinking about RFK Jr. as Health Human Service Secretary?
I hope that never happens. I think I've been clear about that. I've taken the time to go back and read his prior statements. I've watched videos of interviews with him, speeches he's given. I really believe he is not fit to be the Secretary of Health and Human Services.
I think I'll leave it at that then. Maybe that won't happen. Maybe it will. I see that the CDC staff was ordered to cut off communication with the World Health Organization. And the only thing I've heard about that I thought might affect you or me is that when the World Health Organization gets information, say the code for a virus, then they can pass it on to our CDC. That's the means by which the world stays in touch with these things. And I wonder if you have a strong opinion about that.
Yeah, Jen, I would just say that will be temporary. We need the World Health Organization. We cannot be on an island without connection to what's going on with the rest of the world when it comes to infectious disease, but not just infectious disease. So I expect it's, you know, the president's way of getting a message across. Expect to see that we'll reengage there. The other thing, too, for our listeners, RFK's his Senate testimony is going to be on Thursday. I recommend to everybody pay attention. It's I think it's going to be really interesting, and I think it's going to give us a whole bunch to talk about next Tuesday, John, about RFK. I hope by then he no longer is the nominee, but he is going in front of a Senate committee, and in the past that meant that the vote counters in the White House was pretty certain that they can get them confirmed.
Right. I said that testimony starts tomorrow. You said Thursday. Let me double check on that, but maybe you know better than I do.
I thought I read Thursday, but you might be right. It's this week. We can agree on that.
Usually when I come to this fork in the road, we go with the other guy. By the way, my friend Steve Bertrand wanted to ask a question, too.
Doctor, I want to go back to the federal funding being cut off or paused. You know, we tend to speak in extremes now. We call these immigration raids when they, I think, are more like arrests. Given what you know, are people going to actually be hurt by this pause, or are we jumping into, you know, this catastrophic thinking that they're pausing, they're going to look at the spending, but people aren't going to feel it?
Yeah, at this point, there's nothing I've seen that said that people are going to lose their eligibility for the Medicaid program. That might come, Steve, after additional analysis, but that's not what this order is about. This is just about freezing things in place right now.
Good to know. Doc, let's talk next week. Thank you, sir.
All right. Everybody take good care. Bye-bye.
That's what he says. Dr. Jeffrey Copen from Northwestern.